Hello, listeners and fellow explorers. This is Living in the Sprawls, lovely and talented producer slash fiance, Lisa Lowe. I wanted to thank all of you for your constant support of the show. As a new podcast on the scene, the number one way to support the show is to rate, review, and share this podcast with everyone you know. Many of you have been doing this, and it has helped immensely. You can also check out our website and the show notes for other ways to support the show. We have new merch on our website, and we are working with companies that we currently use ourselves to get discount codes for our listeners and support the research and work we do for the show in the process. These companies include Every Table Meal Delivery Service, which offers delicious, cost-effective meals delivered straight to your door. Just CBD Store, which offers great-tasting CBD-only gummies in a variety of flavors, and Miss to Mrs. Boxes for brides-to-be. My sister Jennifer surprised me with this box when I got engaged, and it was the most perfect, thoughtful gift. You can also support us on Patreon and PodFan. Please check out the website at livinginthesprawlpodcast.com for updates on companies we are working with, our testimonies, links, codes, and new Living in the Sprawl merchandise. Again, thank you to all of you, our lovely listeners, for tuning in every week and allowing us to do what we love. Without further ado, your humble correspondent, John Steinberg.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Living in the Sprawl, Southern California's most adventurous podcast. I am, as always, your humble correspondent and host. My name is John Steinberg, and sitting to my right is my lovely and extraordinarily talented producer slash fiance. Her name is Lisa Lowe. We're set to bring to you something to perhaps put you in the mood. Not a literal aphrodisiac, but as we prepare for yet another Valentine's Day celebration, we here at Living in the Sprawl wanted to arm you, our beautiful listeners, with a handy guide to 10 Southern California-based romantic comedies that will make you laugh and cringe with your partner. Full confession, I adore bad movies. In order to justify the time and intellectual space that I choose to devote to films, they best be either A's or F's. And, dear listeners, in this case, I am pleased as punch to report to you all that the following are all unequivocally a combination of both of those. You're going to get some A elements, you're going to get some F elements. The best of both worlds. Most men shrug, snicker, or just outright fail to embrace the romantic comedy. Where they zig, I have chosen to zag. There's a lot to be found to appreciate within the genre, if only so that at the end of the day, when we choose to rest our weary heads, we can remember that be they supermodels, multi-billionaires, or unemployed, unhoused folks with criminal records, romance befuddles us all. It is the one thing that helps to unite men and women far and wide as we all make sense of our daily lives. Romantic comedies can help bind partners together. When they really don't work, I suppose they can serve almost as a wedge as they drive couples apart. But any way you choose to evaluate them on the merits, romantic comedies are here to stay. So let's figure out a way to enjoy them as we prepare for another wonderful, I hope for everyone, Valentine's Day celebration. Here now, 10 mostly bad romantic comedies set in Southern California, designed to be viewed on Valentine's Day. Number 10, let's start in San Diego, Mr. Wrong. This mid-90s misfire sought to promote Ellen DeGeneres as a romantic lead. She plays a busy businesswoman working for a local television station in San Diego who meets a gentleman named Whitman, who at first seems to be everything that she had ever sought in a companion. only to find out that Whitman is not all he's cracked himself up to be. Now, Ellen DeGeneres knows that this is a bad film. She has mentioned it on several occasions over the lifespan of her daytime talk show. And when you study someone's IMDb page and they take a role that seems a little bit out of their comfort zone, only to never return to the genre, well, you've uncovered some answers. This movie doesn't fail because Ellen DeGeneres isn't believable. Actually, it's because Bill Pullman isn't believable. Fresh off his turn as President Whitmore at Independence Day, Mr. Pullman felt the need to broaden his range, take on an entirely different cinematic challenge. But his performance, the way in which the role is written, he's believable in not one frame of the film. He's actually far more suited to playing the president in ID4, Nicole Kidman's partner in Malice, and a number of other prominent roles. But here, he's a poetry-quoting grifter intent on marrying a poor woman, more or less against her will. Because after a while, she does find out that he is not Mr. Right. But rather, folks, get ready for it, get ready for it. He's actually, Mr. Wrong. The San Diego Padre Chicken is involved in the film. Pacific Beach is utilized as a filming location. And while the movie takes us across the border for an extended period in Mexico, the San Diego setting only serves as a reminder that even in one of the nation's most beautiful cities, you inevitably will find from time to time some of the most unattractive of human behaviors. The director of this one, Nick Castle, coming off a great deal of success with Major Payne and Dennis the Menace, also really didn't have a big career after this. So, on behalf of Ellen's career in romantic comedies and Nick Castle's attempt to direct them, we pour one out as we watch mid-90s, bad with a capital B, romantic comedy, Mr. Wrong. At number 9, Destination Wedding from the year of our Lord 2018. We get some big old movie stars, or former movie stars. This Paso Robles set dark comedy starring Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder charmed almost no one when it came out to very little fanfare. But dear listeners, your humble correspondent took notice. Reeves and Ryder meet whilst on hand in Paso to celebrate the wedding of a mutual acquaintance. Neither one is excited to be on hand, and even though both are gorgeous movie stars, wouldn't you know it, they've found themselves unlucky in love. Why have they found themselves on the outs in their romantic lives? Well, it's because they are deeply cynical, more or less awful people who drive everyone away with critical, scathing commentary on all conceivable subjects. I'm not sure what the goal here was, and as you study the way in which Keanu Reeves delivers line after line filled with acidic verbal jabs, you'll think to yourselves, when is that next John Wick coming out again? Winona Ryder, who gained a new lease on her professional life with her appearance on Stranger Things, is equally uncharismatic in this truly puzzling meditation on the perils of doing an even less pleasant lifelong impression of Miranda from Sex and the City. There's an awkward sex scene to be appreciated here. Some wine tasting that doesn't seem to inspire much elation. And in general, Destination Wedding offers few opportunities for earnest laughter, but it offers plenty of opportunities for ironic laughter. So if you feel bad for laughing at this one, please don't. These are huge celebrities that have been famous for multiple decades who are doing just fine. So if you don't have the money for a romantic weekend in Paso, but you'd like to replicate the experience at home, check out a different movie. But if you're interested in two major stars taking major missteps as they awkwardly attempt to evade Cupid's arrow, then, my friends, Destination Wedding is for you. And that's why it's here at number 9. Number 8, It's Complicated, starring Meryl Streep, Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin, John Krasinski, and Lake Bell. My lovely and talented producer slash fiance disagrees with me on this one, but it was my feeling that the 2009 ageless romantic comedy from Nancy Myers was worthy of inclusion on the So Bad It's Good list. We are said to be in Santa Barbara for a lot of this movie, and yet very little of it was actually shot on location in Santa Barbara. Most of it was filmed on the East Coast, save for the home where Meryl Streep's character resides. That is a depiction of a lush, expensive, with a capital E, farmhouse somewhere in the Westlake Village, Thousand Oaks area. For those who believe that Meryl Streep can do no wrong, check out this one with objective lenses. The story of a divorced, successful, middle-aged Santa Barbara Streep sees her character reunite with her ex-husband as they attend their son's college graduation. Problem being, or I suppose the complication, being that Alec Baldwin, playing the ex-husband, has since been remarried. And Meryl Streep's character has found herself on the brink of a prospering romance with the ageless Steve Martin. Nancy Myers has warmed the hearts of millions with a career spanning from Private Benjamin in the 80s all the way to Anne Hathaway and Robert De Niro in The Intern. And along the way, she stopped for some similar storytelling in films like Something's Gotta Give and a whole host of others. Honestly, if you explore her IMDb page, you will notice some themes. But the romance between Alec Baldwin and Streep here doesn't really work. It's not totally believable. And Steve Martin's estimable talents are kind of wasted as he is sort of a third wheel in this film. It's not particularly funny, not very insightful, and I think it would stretch the limits of credulity to believe this is a scenario that's actually taking place out there somewhere in the world, specifically in Santa Barbara. But I know this film has its fans, one of them being my lovely and talented producer slash fiance. So, dear listeners, if you find yourselves in a quandary similar to that of myself and my beautiful fiancé, then perhaps it's time to dial up It's Complicated. Number 7, Rumor Has It, from the year of our Lord, 2005. This Jennifer Aniston vehicle takes us to the east side of Los Angeles County, where we stop in at the opulent suburban mecca that my producer loves so much, and that is Pasadena. Rob Reiner directed this one. In addition to Miss Aniston, Kevin Costner, Mark Ruffalo, Richard Jenkins, and the incomparable Kathy Bates. Aniston plays a young, busy businesswoman engaged to Ruffalo, who finds herself in bed with Kevin Costner, only to find out that KC has actually already bedded both Aniston's mother and grandmother, who's portrayed here by Shirley MacLaine. Apparently, the story we're told here was the inspiration for Mike Nichols' The Graduate. The problem here, among a litany of them, is that when you ask your audience to consider one of the best comedies of all time, The Graduate is in the top 15 on AFI's list of 100 greatest movies ever. And then your audience considers a film like The Graduate only to come back to this witless farce. You've only taken audience members out of the multiplex and more or less asked them to just go ahead and turn your film off and turn on The Graduate. Why am I sitting here watching Rumor Has It when I could be watching The Graduate otherwise? Question mark. I don't know. And evidently, neither did Rob Reiner, who, after enjoying an enormous amount of success with This is Spinal Tap and When Harry Met Sally, thought it prudent to return back to his romantic comedy directing days with Rumor Has It. The romance here is completely preposterous. It is believable that Kevin Costner could have successfully wooed the considerably younger Aniston, but with the repeated mentions of only in Pasadena or this and that in Pasadena, there's a lot of that in this film, everyone. Oh, and real people who are actually from Los Angeles, they're probably from Pasadena. There's just a ton of that. Why would Kevin Costner be hanging out with any of these people? Not really sure. So, yes, not a ton in the way of laughter, even less in the vein of romance. But did I mention the cast, everyone? This movie wishes so badly it had come out 8 years later, so it could have used Adele's hit song with the same name. But instead, we, as an audience, have to suffer through typical rom-com fare from a lot of people who should have known better. This is a fun one to watch after eating an edible with your partner, laughing at how ridiculous it all is. And rumor has it that though you and your partner may disagree on quite a lot, you will most certainly agree that this film is rather unsuccessful, but in a fun way. And that's why it's right here on the list. Number 6, Roadhouse. Now, settle down. Roadhouse is not a conventional romantic comedy by any stretch of the imagination, but if you look a bit closer, you will be able to detect a lot of the same organs that prop up and sustain other romantic comedies. Patrick Swayze plays Dalton, who is, I guess, a nationally renowned bouncer. He's a famous bouncer, because I guess that's a thing that exists, recruited to do security at a new bar in a rough and tumble area prone to customer violence, I guess. Along the way, he meets Kelly Lynch, and they have an affair that's sort of more charming than anything you'll find in Mr. Wrong. It's complicated, and rumor has it. So even though this film tells you that it's an action story, if you look closely, again, it has all of the inner workings of a romantic comedy. This was filmed a couple of different places throughout the sprawl. Namely, Sanger, where the home of the villainous Brad Wesley is located. Sanger being within Fresno County. I've seen the house where this was shot, and if you pull yourself back, it really does kind of look like you are in Missouri, somewhere in the Midwest or the South where the film is meant to be set. But as is so often the case, Southern California has a gargantuan supply of terrain to choose from. And within that terrain, there are a lot of places that can be made to look like other places. When we think about Swayze, we might reasonably flash to his performance in Ghost with the Pottery Wheel and the Righteous Brothers song, Point Break, rocking the Ronald Reagan mask with the long blonde locks, or, of course, Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner during his turn with Jennifer Beals. But the romance between Swayze and Kelly Lynch has everything you're looking for from a romantic comedy. So I would urge, put on Roadhouse with the lights turned off, two glasses of Pinot Noir on the table, a cheese plate with a few crackers, and get ready for an experience. Swayze is definitely eye candy for some audience members here, and the over-the-top, completely unnecessary hand-to-hand combat and violence will be enough to enlist the fandom of other audience members. It's a win-win for all involved watching Roadhouse. At number 5, little scene classic question mark, probably better phrased as an anti-classic, mid-90s Sprung, a movie that I watched way too many times after 11 p.m. on one of the movie channels that seemingly played the movie constantly. This one was shot in Los Angeles, but we are told that we're in Pittsburgh, so I guess we're in Pittsburgh, even though it's pretty clearly Los Angeles. Rusty Cundiff directed this gem about a pair of friends looking for love in Pittsburgh. One of them probably belongs on Tinder. The other, in a contemporary telling of the story, most likely has an eHarmony account. The gentleman, honestly looking for love, finds it in the form of Tisha Campbell, who we should all know and love from television's Martin. His buddy, the gentleman who's probably on Tinder 3 hours a day every day, finds himself a bodacious, money-hungry lady to keep him company. After eHarmony and Martin's Gina decide they're going to get married, their superficial friends bind together to derail the upcoming nuptials. I remember being probably 10 years old, 11 years old, and finding one of the characters in this film very appealing from the perspective of an 11-year-old kid discovering that he's going through puberty. But I kept coming back to the movie because it was directed by Rusty Cundiff, who's more famously known for his horror franchise, Tales from the Hood. I loved Tales from the Hood, and I'd watch that one all the time. And again, when the clock struck 11, and my young 11-year-old mind found itself wandering, Sprung would consistently find itself on rotation as I watched this very unfunny comedy with a lot of people that I wished I could hang out with when I grew up. I hope Tisha Campbell got a really nice paycheck for this one. And I wonder how many other 11-year-olds out there were in lockstep with your humble host and correspondent as they came of age watching a bad romantic comedy like Sprung. A lot of fun. Check it out. Number 4, another entry from the late 90s. This time, David Spade's Lost and Found. Lots of Long Beach in this one. That's where the characters reside, in the same apartment complex, and where a number of the movie's more comedic scenes take place. There's also an extended segment helmed on location at the landmark Hollywood Bowl, where Sophie Marceau is able to wow David Spade with her musical ability during a private tour of the bowl. So, for those of you who thought that in Knocked Up, it was a little far-fetched for Seth Rogen to be paired up with Katherine Heigl, no matter how much alcohol may have been involved, this one is significantly worse in committing the same type of cinematic sin. Sophie Marceau played the love interest of Mel Gibson in Braveheart. Braveheart, for those that don't remember, won like all the Oscars the year that it was up for them. Best Picture, Best Director. And even though we don't look at Mel Gibson in the same way, people still have a deep reverence for the movie Braveheart. So when you're talking about a woman being pursued by William Wallace, and then you take that same woman, plop her into Long Beach, and try to pair her with David Spade, you're asking for trouble. She's French, she's beautiful, she's successful, she is not only out of David Spade's league, to quote Sam Jackson in Pulp Fiction, they aren't even playing the same sport. Artie Lang is involved in Lost and Found, and in the movie's grossest scene, David Spade takes a fistful of peanut butter and jams it into Artie Lang's mouth to keep him quiet. Just to entice you a bit further, let me outline the plot briefly. David Spade, living in the same apartment complex as Sophie Marceau, comes up with a scheme to win her affections. He decides he is going to kidnap her dog, and as she worriedly searches in vain for her departed canine, Spade will obtain her love by finding the pup and in the end getting the girl. It's beyond preposterous. This is a movie that I went to see at the mall in Fashion Island. When I was a kid, every Friday night, all of the preteens at my middle school would go to the same cinema. Whoever was not in middle school at Corona Del Mar during the Friday 8 p.m. opening weekend showing of Lost and Found undoubtedly wished they were elsewhere. It was pandemonium, a sea of 12-year-old boys and girls looking to cut loose and having nowhere and no real reason to do it. And even in that context, even at 12, Lost and Found still stuck out because it was absolutely ridiculous. But a ton of fun. So seek it out as you and your partner feed each other exotic chocolates. And number 3, Blind Date, starring Bruce Willis and Kim Basinger from that most romantic of eras, the late 80s. Directed by Blake Edwards, this production finds a young Bruce Willis picking up Kim Basinger from a massive estate in Bel Air. The two go to dinner. Kim Basinger drinks way, way, way too much. And hijinks ensue, because of course they do. For most people, Hudson Hawk is the true definition of a misbegotten movie. I would submit that Blind Date should also be considered for that not-so-coveted label. Bruce Willis is doing his best with the performance, but this isn't moonlighting, and Kim Basinger is not in the arms of Mickey Rourke in 8.5 weeks, and not on the verge of becoming the recipient of an Academy Award in L.A. Confidential. I could see how this script intrigued the budding movie stars, but the execution leaves quite a bit to be desired. The two have virtually no chemistry. Buying Kim Basinger as an alcoholic in training in this context doesn't totally stick the landing. And most of all, Blake Edwards seems out of his depth directing this woebegone flick. Edwards, one of the true directorial lions of the American cinematic landscape, earned his bona fides presiding over objective classics. This is the guy who directed Breakfast at Tiffany's, 10, all the Pink Panther movies, the good ones anyway, Days of Wine and Roses, and at least 5 others that deserve recognition. And yet, as he found himself in the twilight of his career, tried to keep it modern and contemporary with 2 young, good-looking kids on their way to stardom. But as is often the case with blind dates, sometimes it's better to simply cut your losses. Something no one did on the set of this truly bad romantic comedy. Blind Date will make you laugh, especially when it's not attempting to do so. And that's why it's here on our list of the 10 signature bad romantic comedies set in Southern California. And number 2, The One That Time Forgot, The Truth About Cats and Dogs from the mid-90s. This one takes place on the west side of Los Angeles, so you know it's going to be bad. Starring Janine Garofalo and Mia Wallace herself, that's right, Uma Thurman, the film is one of those that tries its hardest to be both romantic and humorous and succeeds on neither front. Garofalo plays a veterinarian with a call-in radio show that sees her providing her best animal-oriented advice to listeners. On one such phone call, she chats up a charming British listener with a pet-related problem. Because the story takes place before everyone was on the internet, the seemingly interested young Brit has no idea what his favorite radio host looks like. He would like to take her on a date to thank her for the truly helpful advice that she presented to him on the air. And because her self-esteem is so low, she sends Mia Wallace, yep, Uma Thurman, on a date in her stead. This is one of those stories which presents chicanery in the realm of mating. Something I've never actually seen in person. I've never even heard about this in person. 10 Things I Hate About You falls under this subheading. So does She's All That, 40 Days and 40 Nights. All of these stories predicated around the notion that relationships somehow need more incentive to happen, that there must be like a financial underpinning required to force people to interact. I never understand why this is a trend that occurs so frequently, but in any case, as the veterinarian speaks to the young Brit more and more, she finds herself growing closer and closer to him, all the while having him believe that she looks like Uma Thurman. Another problem here is that there's nothing wrong with Janine Garofalo. She's not a female version of Quasimodo from The Hunchback of Notre Dame. She is a fine-looking person who's clearly confident enough to provide advice to people throughout the city of Los Angeles on the welfare of their pets. It doesn't make sense. This would take place never, nowhere, and the talents of Uma Thurman and Janine Garofalo are squandered as the climax on the Santa Monica Pier comes closer and closer to fruition. Because, of course, the young Brit has to find out about all the chicanery and etc., etc., etc. It's interesting because of how bad it is, and if you cue this one up in the 2020s, you'll be transported back to an era where anonymity existed, and even though you were a famous radio host, no one had access to any medium that would have produced a picture of you. It's a great throwback, nifty time capsule. The truth about cats and dogs is that it really, really sucks, but this one, maybe more than all the others that have come before it, is definitely worth your time because you and your partner will find yourselves laughing, ha ha ha, all the way into each other's arms. The truth about cats and dogs, not to be missed. At number one, drumroll. I couldn't find any way around it. Number one, folks, Geely. This one made quite an impression on the film-going landscape in the early aughts. Writer-director Martin Brest, who previously had given the world Beverly Hills Cop and Scent of a Woman, decided to, I guess, fold up the tent and call it a career after this one. His IMDb page ends at Geely. Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez star in this infamous, with a capital I, underline it, italicize it, put it in quotation marks, this movie engendered more mockery than perhaps any other in the last couple of decades. It struck at the height of interest in Bennifer and saw the young lovers together in an expensive studio release aimed at the crowd that probably stood in line to see There's Something About Mary on dates only a couple years before. Ben Affleck's accent is as curious as the title of the film itself. There's a really not great performance of a mentally challenged young man by the guy who passes out at the beginning of The Hangover. My favorite actor, Al Pacino, comes in for one scene of some very fine yelling. Jennifer Lopez is completely miscast. This is the movie that will seal the deal for you, dear listeners. This Valentine's Day, forget Pretty Woman. Never mind the 40-year-old virgin. To hell with you, The Notebook. Let us rejoice while watching Geely. Let me quote the Goo Goo Dolls for a moment here. A band I don't really like, but feel the quote is appropriate. Sometimes you bleed just to know you're alive. Well, you can get there without shedding any blood. Watching Geely will affirm that you are indeed still with us among the living. Have fun out there. And that's going to do it for another episode of Living in the Sprawl. I want to thank everyone for their continued support. It really does help. Anything that you guys can do for us on the social media front, hop on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. Any kind remarks that you have to leave, please do so. That stuff really helps us out on the business end of things. The Instagram handle is Living in the Sprawl Podcast. We invite you to write us with suggestions for forthcoming episodes, topics that you would like to hear discussed on a future episode of the show. Any and all feedback is enormously appreciated, and you can reach us at livinginthesprawlpodcast@gmail.com. Check out our website for all of your Living in the Sprawl merchandise needs. We have some outstanding mugs and stickers, magnets, anything that you can think of, you'll find it on the website, including our tremendously helpful Guide to the Sprawl. We've put together a very helpful cheat sheet to the episodes in our back catalog. The Sprawl Guide has links to subjects covered on all the episodes. It's designed to be kind of a cheat sheet to give you the best that Living in the Sprawl has to offer. And just so you know, we are also offering our concierge service. Give us 20 minutes and an idea of what you're interested in, and we will provide you with an outstanding itinerary for how to conquer the sprawl. As always, I am your humble correspondent and host. My name is John Steinberg, and I could never, ever do this or much of anything else, I'm kidding, without my lovely and talented producer / fiance. Her name is Lisa Lowe. Thanks again for listening to another episode of Living in the Sprawl, Southern California's most adventurous podcast. Until next time.